Accession number 10421, Reel 4.
Mr. Thornton, Reel 4. What happened next, Mr. Thornton?
Well, in the bayonet side, we had after we'd been trained how to use a bayonet on the bayonet dummies, then we had to go through an assault course, which meant a series of the dummies spread at distances and obstacles put in the way, and in between them would be the bayonet, the ground sack, as they called it, and we would we'd be chased by an NCO up this bayonet course. You're puffing and blowing even after you're training, because the pressure that you put in by stabbing your bayonet, pulling it out, jumping over something in the ground sack, and then next would come another dummy, another ground sack. So by that time you were fairly well shattered. And then of course we had the training stick, which was a pad of sacking on one end of a stick and a ring on the other. And it was for training you to use the butt of your rifle as well. You would have the scabbard on your rifle, and you'd have a partner, another recruit, who would jab the stick at you, and you were taught how to fend it off like that. I can't, of course, I've got to... I'm doing that when I'm saying it to you. You've got to fend it off, and then... step in, bring your butt up, and hit the pad with the butt, and then he would fall to the ground, and your partner would turn the stick round, put the ring on the ground, and you had to stab your bayonet down over and try and put your bayonet through the ring. That was supposed to be a man that you'd knock down lying on the floor, and that was another part of your bayonet training, which took it all in really.
So you had your spell during the day on weapon training. What mm-hmm. was the next session?
Next was PT, 1 hour. You went to the gymnasium and you started doing your normal exercises. The first thing you did, of course, was limbering up, which meant running round and round the gym, getting your muscles hardened up, and then starting with your exercises, which were all the normal... thing that everybody's known for years, physical jerks, touching your toes, swinging your arms to the side, over your head, and then of course jumping over the horse. And by the time you finished, you'd done an hour and you were sweating, because you were in a gymnasium where it was fairly warm, and you were really warmed up.
And what did you wear?
We had white vests and blue shorts, your slippers, which were shoes, canvas, as they called them, that were brown, and your socks, and that was your dress for PT. And they had to be clean, the same as your uniform.
And this would be specialised staff?
Oh yes, you had your, what they call regimental instructors, who would be corporals. And then you had a sergeant out the, as it was then, the APTC, and a warrant officer out of the APTC in charge of the whole, because we had two depots there, another regiment with us, and he was in charge of both lots. So you had a warrant officer, a sergeant, and your two or three regimental instructors. They wore the black and red jerseys, like a wasp, and blue longs. And your APT wore their blue shorts, their white vest, and a pure white pullover with the badge in the middle.
Did you get the chance to shower at the end?
Oh yes, every day. Every time you're in PT, as soon as you're finished, in the shower. Oh yes, that was done. That was you were chasing, and whether it's hot or cold, you were underneath it, and you had the NCO there who had to be with you. You scored NCO, Lance Corporal or Corporal went to the gym with you, and he made sure you were underneath the shower before you came out.
And at what time of the day would this be?
It could be morning. It could be afternoon. Mostly the first period after dinner. Not the first period after dinner. It was usually the last period before lunch.
And then you would be marched to the canteen for lunch?
That was the third, right. And then they went, you showered, changed, and then it was lunchtime. And you'd collect your knife, fork and spoon, your plates, and off you'd go over there and so march to your dinner. And there were tables there with 12 or 24, 12 men on it. And two of you picked at the end of the table. You went to the cookhouse and you got a Dixie of 12 portions of each in, and you served it. Of course, you had a corporal on the table as well, and made sure that there wasn't any big rations and small rations going.
So when you came out of lunch, you went to your afternoon session?
Half past 12 was lunch, and then we started at 2 o'clock, and we had one more hour to go. Now that could be education, because you had to have sit for your education certificates, and it could be anything like fatigues. It could be what they call interior economy, which we liked, where you sat on your beds and did all your extra stuff. Say all your equipment you would take down to the Blanco shed. There's a shed there with where you laid all your stuff on, and blankoed it, came up, let it dry, and polished all your stuff. That happened. Or it could be cleaning the bathroom thoroughly again.
And that took you up to 3 o'clock?
That took you up to 3 o'clock. Mm. And of course, after that, it was various fatigues. Down to the cookhouse, dining hall, quartermaster stores, coal fatigue, and any cleaning the area up, anything like that. And then that took you up to for another hour or so, and then you started to clean your stuff for the next morning, and then tea. Then after tea, more cleaning, could be the barrack room, and up till about 9:30, about 8 o'clock. And off you went, if you wanted to the canteen. And pine peas or egg and chips, fourpence halfpenny, 4.5p for pine peas, 6p egg and chips. And come back and, have a chat. Nothing else to do. Have a chat round the fire in the winter. So go into bed. And you start all over the next day.
Did you have any anti-gas training?
Yes, oh yes. That wasn't something that happened every day. Occasionally you went into the gas chamber, ordinary tear gas. You went in and you put in without a gas mask, for a few minutes, and you came out with your eyes streaming, of course, and then you went in then with a gas mask on, type of gas mask with a tube on. But it was good enough for that particular gas. Some gases, of course, it wouldn't be. And then you had you were taught about when they steamed up, because as soon as you put them on, you start to get warm. Your glass used to steam up, so you had a little tin inside your pouch called anti-dim. It was like a cream that you used to rub on both sides of your glass, and that would stop them from steaming up. And then you would have to give messages, and the NCO would one of your friends would tell you something with the gas mask on. You had to run round in a circle to somebody else and tell him what he said. Well, some of the things that came out were unbelievable.
So you had no special clothing to wear for this training. It was basically your denims or uniform?
Your denims. It was always denims, which then were a pair of trousers, denim trousers, and a loose jacket, like an old man with old man's boiler suit, not combined, separate. And but occasionally you'd have to wear your best battle dress, or your second best battle dress, and your putties. You didn't wear your putties for ordinary training. You just wore your denims loose. But every Wednesday, you put your putties on with your denims, just to make sure you could put them on right. And then occasionally, for inspections, your battle dress came out, best battle dress, and second best. And of course, you had three hats. You had your what we called a fatigue hat, but it was fore and aft. You've probably seen them. And we had the ordinary peak cap, and then we had a superfine peak cap, which was a very fine cloth, which you didn't get till your 12th week in training.
Did you wouldn't do any tactics or anything of that nature at this stage?
Yes, fieldcraft. Yes. We had an hour's fieldcraft, but it was a simple fieldcraft, like formations, how to change direction, hand signals, whistle blasts, and things like that. But it was very easy stuff. You know, that it wasn't complicated. There wasn't a training grounds to do any of route marches. Of course, came into it.
Yes, on route. I've got us through a typical route march.
Yes, you started in your battle dress. Because they wouldn't allow you to go outside in the public with your denims on. So you went in your second best battle dress. And you had your full pack on, which was it's a big square pack. And your side, your haversack on the side, your rifle and bayonet. And you started off on your route march. And after the first half hour, you stopped. That was to loosen off your putties, because your legs had swollen. With your putties being tight, you loosened them off because you could feel your shin bones going, getting sore and aching. So you loosened off, and off you went. Then you got 10 minutes every hour. And you gradually worked up to, the first one would be a couple of miles. Then you gradually worked up to 5, 10 miles.
What were you carrying in your packs?
Well, your normal stuff that you carried, your socks. All your spare stuff, your PT shoes, your socks, a blanket, and items that you would need on a route march if you were going on a long one.
What about meals if you were on a long route march?
No, that didn't come into it. We were back for lunch or tea or whatever it was.
Did you what kind of marching order did you do on route march? Your rifle slung?
Yes. Rifle slung with the rifle sling over your right. And of course, sometimes you went you didn't go in marching order. You went in battle order, which that meant that your little haversack that you had on your side when you went full pack was put on your back, because the straps were made the same so they could fit both packs, and that was sort of battle order, the thing you would do if you're going into action. You wouldn't have your big pack would be kept in a truck with the stores, and brought to you if it was ever needed.
How often did you go on route marches?
Oh, about once a week. Short ones. Of course, those days, you know, we marched on route march in fours, not threes, as it is today. So it was a very wide column, really. So that if it was dark, getting dark, then we had to have exactly the same as a vehicle of any description. We had to have a lamp at the rear, and a lamp at the front. That was because of the width of the column. I think that's probably one of the reasons why they decided to make a column in three ranks, and instead of fours.
Were you encouraged to were you allowed to relax during the march?
Oh, 10 minutes, yes. 10 minutes. You lay down the grass, or with your pack on, just add a 5 minutes rest. Put your feet up, just to let the blood go back into your legs.
And could you converse? And
oh yes,
see,
oh yes, oh yes. It was nothing like that. You were allowed to. That's the reason of the stop, was to rest and have a chat. A smoke, if you smoked.
And during the march itself, were you talking and singing?
Oh yes, you were encouraged to do that, because it did help. It did help you to do the march better, help you along. Definitely encouraged to sing.
What songs were you singing?
Well, those days, you see, be along with Tipperary and Pack Up Your Troubles and any popular thing that was out at that time.
Did your training take in any experiences of trench digging and warfare?
No, not really. But we had we were taught in our fieldcraft about camouflage and concealment, how to use folds in the ground, how to use a hill, never to walk on the skyline, especially at certain times of the day where you would show up for any snipers or any enemy that would be looking at you. A little fold in the ground you could really hide in if you taught properly. Don't lie down with your legs, with your toes on the ground and your heel, and put your body round so it conforms to the ground. How to crawl, using your elbows and your knees, bringing your knees up towards your stomach, so that you're behind. It's not raised up. That's the only thing really we got down to on the training on fieldcraft, which we did at a later date, and the advanced stuff.
And all this training was done as a squad?
Oh yes, as a squad. So you had about 24 men in a squad, and you stayed with that same squad for the 6 months.
And your leader would be a sergeant?
Yes, you had what they called a first, a second, and third. First instructor was your sergeant, second was a corporal, and a third a lance corporal.
Can we turn now, Mr. Thornton, to the organisation of the depot?
Yes, well, it was called the Recruit Company, and it was formed into squads. Probably, depending on how many recruits came in into the depot, sometimes you'd only have two squads. In a recruiting season, when they started recruit heavily, then you'd fill up, you'd probably have about six squads, all named after battle honours in your own barrack room. And of course, then you had your permanent staff, who were people like dining room people, the cooks, the orderly room. You had your colour sergeant, your quartermaster, your RQMS, regimental quartermaster sergeant, your regimental tailor, who was a civilian, your regimental barber, who was a civilian, and the cobbler, who was a civilian. They'd probably been... I know that the barber was an old soldier. Did his 7 years, came out and got a job as a civilian barber. He'd been a barber in the army, and they took him on as a civilian barber in the depot. You had the major commanding officer, you had your second-in-command, your adjutant, and your administrative officer. You also had a civilian administrative officer. All depots used to have that. Probably a retired officer who decided that he couldn't carry on as a regular officer, which happened periodically. Then he would apply for the job as admin officer, civilian, which would be given an honorary rank. Probably.
So he didn't have a company organisation?
It was called Recruit Company. No, it was called a company. It was only one company, a recruit company.
And the basic was the squad.
That's right. The squad was it depended on the number of recruits coming in. You could have 30, and sometimes as far as 24. when they came in, of course, you could be in 4 or 5 weeks before the squad was formed, because then you would be have the advantage of getting a little bit training in before it was formed, and you'd be used as demonstrators how to turn and how to stand to attention, which was easy for the corporal if he had somebody there to say, oh, this is how you do it, without doing it himself, where then he could point out the faults that you did when you stand to attention, such as turn your knuckles to the front, which made your shoulders go forward. It's amazing what it does. If you turn your fists out over, it brings your shoulders back. And that's why all soldiers are more or less fairly straight back and upright.
Were there any specialists within the organisation? I know you did mention the PT people. Was there any other kind of specialists?
No more.
Did you get any opportunity to do any of your drills or marches with the band?
No, we didn't really. The only time I can remember was on Remembrance Day, which was then called Armistice Day. We marched down to the memorial in Newcastle with the band then. I can't remember now, it's 50 years ago, which band it was. But all I can tell you that there was 3 units marching down. The artillery were in the old barracks next to us, the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, who were in the same barracks as we were. And we used to set off. The artillery used to go first down Barrack Road. Northumberland used to go next, and the DLI used to go last. And the DLI would pass them both on the road to get into the senator.
From the very beginning, was there any attempt to teach you the history of the regiment?
Oh, yes. We had regimental history at school. And you were given a pamphlet, a little book, regimental history book, little green and red coloured book. I haven't got it now. It's gone in the passage of time. It told you when the regiment was formed, who was responsible for forming it, where it was formed, what it was formed from. That was the first battalion, and then it went on to the second battalion, 1758 for the first, and 1839 for the second, and then it was then called the 68th, and that was the first battalion, and then later on it told you when the Remagale, 1881 was the first time that they were called the Durham Light Infantry. It was 68th and the 106th, then that was the first. And the 106th was formed from the Bombay European Light Infantry in India. And as I say, in 1881, it became the Durham Light Infantry, 1st and 2nd Battalions.
And what other methods did they use to the side of your regiment, to build up your loyalty in the regiment? We're constantly, for example, reminded of certain battle honours.
Oh yes, well all the barrack rooms were called after battle honours. And
can you recall any of them?
Yes, there was. I was in Ladysmith Squad, which was the South African War, named after Ladysmith, where the first battalion were at the siege of Ladysmith. Then there was Hooge, which was a big battle in the 14 War. Then there was Salamanca. Vitoria, Nivelle, the Salamanca and Vitoria were the big war in the Peninsular War. What was the others? Ain, that was a 14 War one, and only about 6 actually, 6 squads were the names. But there was a rivalry in the squads, and chaps would say I was in Ladysmith or I was in Hooge squad, and there was a rivalry amongst them, and who would be the best. So it was instilled in them really when you thought about it.
Can we turn now to your recollections of your officers in this training unit?
Yes, I remember the CO very well. He was called Major VA. Funny name, W-H-I-E-I. He was a steely-eyed major. He used to look straight through you when he came on parade. And he, his hair, they used to call him the man with the painted hair because it was so short. And so woe betide anybody that had long hair. There was a story that he even made his wife have an eaten crop. And another story about him, you could always tell, he became a machine gun officer later, you could always tell the machine gunners by the haircuts. Then the company commander was Captain MacBain. At that time, he later on became Colonel MacBain, who was a very strict officer, but very quiet and a very religious man. And many is the time that a chap has got away with something when he said, well, I went to church there. And the quartermaster was an old major, probably joined round the Boer War time, who was, as old quartermasters are, they think they own everything, and you got away with nothing with them.
Were they competent?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they were those days. And then the adjutant was an officer called Tommy Stallard, Captain Stallard. He later on got the DSO, he's a fine chap, a battalion champion sprinter, and he got the DSO for planning his escapes from Germany during the war. Well, there wasn't many, that's about covered, and then you had your couple of second lieutenants who you didn't really get, they weren't outstanding, you see, at that particular time. And my squad sergeant was an old sailor, really, his first, but then he packed the sea and joined the DLI. He was a great chap, a good instructor, never shouted a lot. He got the military medal on the Northwest Frontier of India in the 20s. And the corporal was not a bad chap. But of course, you had to do what you're told. You had to do what you're told. Right. Lance Corporal, they changed over, and of course, you didn't take a great deal of notice of them. They were posted posted away to the battalion. You got a new one in the place. But your sergeant and your corporal normally did their 2-year tour of the depot. Colour sergeant, well, he was a 14 war chap, very quiet. Never lost his temper, but was efficient, and you could rely on him. If you went to see about your pay, if something wrong, you could rely that he checked it and made sure that it was put right. That's about all the officers and NCOs really that you got in touch with. The order room, of course, you didn't, as recruits, you didn't have a lot to do with the order room. You never saw the RSM. A lot. The RSM, of course, I was another 14 war soldier, he was a great tall chap, very very strict, as an RSM is, of course. But you many times went past and saluted him, and got wrong for saluting him because then you looked round, you saw the Sam Brown, and the peak cap. You see, and you thought he was an officer, and you were so used to making sure you salute officers. You don't salute me, boy, he would say. And that was that. So that covers the officers and the other NCOs.
Did you see or have any experience of any abuse of any kind, cruelty? Or?
Well, it was in a way, but it was more in fun. We had a corporal who was a proper wag, and we had this chap called Duffy, a recruit, and he said, right, Duffy, I've heard you were a spy, and he hung the doors on the back, he hung Duffy on I'm going to shoot you now, Duffy, and of course he got his rifle down, and he put a blank in, you see, and he shot Duffy, and Duffy collapsed, he thought he'd been shot, things like that. But I never saw any. There was a bit of digging in the back and things like that, you know, which wake yourself up, boy. But no real, you know, The things you hear now, I'm very surprised at, because the discipline was much harsher in my day than it is now, and there was never any really cruelty of any kind.